All right. Well, thank y'all for coming and thank you for joining us today. We have a few things on the agenda and we'll be covering, this is the topics we'll be covering in today's meeting. So please stay muted during the presentation so that everyone can hear our speakers as clearly as possible, please. There will be time at the end of each presentation for questions if you have any. So let's go ahead and get started and we will get started with remarks from Commissioner Nelson.
Good morning. Thanks, Kate. Like Kate said, I hope you all had a nice Thanksgiving. I know I did. It was busy. I was all over Texas, but it was a lot of fun. We do have a lot to get to this morning, so I'm including our legislative recommendations and also the introduction of some new staff that we have. So I'm just going to jump right into it. To start, the first topic I wanted to touch on was a designated doctor sales tax issue. That's been one of the biggest issues that we've been dealing with for the past several months. For those of you that don't know, in October, the comptroller's office issued what's called a private letter ruling stating that designated doctor exams were subject to sales tax. And I kind of wanted to provide a little bit of background about how we got here. We've been actually working on this issue since February. Back in February, one of our stakeholders independently contacted the comptroller's office asking if DD exams were subject to sales tax. They received informal guidance at the time from the comptroller stating that these were considered independent medical exams and therefore were subject to sales tax. They began charging a sales tax on DD exams. And we were quickly contacted from a number of stakeholders asking what should be done about that. We do not regulate the tax code. We have no authority over it. So we reached out to the comptroller immediately and started working with them. Starting in February and March, we started meeting with them routinely, explaining what designated doctor exams were, their impact on the system, how many were done. We submitted a request for a formal opinion, and that is when we got that private letter ruling in October, again, stating that these were subject to sales tax. Fortunately, we were able to continue working with the comptroller's office, and in November, they issued a memo saying that they were going to delay the implementation of that guidance until after the session to give industry an opportunity to try to get an exemption through legislation. So we will be pursuing this as one of our legislative recommendations to the legislature. It's going to be our number one priority. Kim's going to talk about that a little bit later this morning. But we are aware of it. We're concerned about it. We are having ongoing conversations with members of the Capitol right now about it. So, stay tuned for more on that, but it will be our biggest priority this session. Sticking with designated doctor issues, the other thing I wanted to mention was the current informal rule proposal that we have out on reimbursement for designated doctor and other exams. Right now, that's out for informal comment. We've only received one comment so far. We are anticipating we'll get a lot more in over the next few weeks. But I did just want to remind everyone, we do have a meeting on Thursday where we're going to lay out more about this proposal. We're going to walk you through the proposal. We're going to give you some of our reasoning for what we did. We're going to provide some examples of medical bills. And hopefully we're going to get some feedback from you all, because the plan for now is, again, this is an informal proposal. We're going to get all your input, get all your feedback. Hopefully you submit written comments. We will go through those over the next several months. We will work on a formal proposal, and we will wait until after session, probably June or July, to put out a formal proposal on that. But we do need your feedback. So please, if you haven't looked at it yet, please do that and get us your comments. The last thing I wanted to touch on is some recent staff changes. We put out a notice, I think it was 2 weeks ago. Some of this was spurred on by retirements, and some of it was a little bit of a reorganization that I've done, splitting one program area into two. You know, unfortunately, we've lost two really good deputy commissioners. The first is Matt Zurich, who's been Deputy Commissioner of Health and Safety. He retired last month. And then Joe McElrath, Deputy Commissioner for Business Process. He is going to be retiring at the end of the month. Of course, we hate losing two long tenured key staff members. They've done a lot for this agency and for the workers' comp system. They're going to be very missed by everyone here, and I'm sure a lot of you all. But we are very fortunate that they trained their staff up very well, that they had excellent teams in place, and that we have found people within DWC to step in and fill those roles. So I'm going to let everyone introduce themselves in just a minute rather than me do all of it, with the exception of Erica De La Cruz. She is our new Deputy Commissioner of Customer Services. She's unable to be with us today. She's at an all-day meeting at another agency. But she was an internal hire who was part of their reorganization that I kind of put in place. So Erica has been with DWC since 2005. She's been doing various roles here, but she's really been running most claims customer service functions since 2017. So Erica is now going to be over claims customer services, as well as self-insurance regulation and the subsequent injury fund. She is extremely capable. She has brought in new ideas. She's got our claims customer service program in a really good position. So she's done a great job. I know she's going to do really well on that. And with that, I'm going to turn it over to Mary Landrum to introduce herself. She is our new Deputy Commissioner of Health and Safety. I know a lot of you know Mary, but please welcome her to her new role.
Thank you, Commissioner. Good morning. Well, as Commissioner Nelson says, I am Mary Landrum, and I'm the Deputy Commissioner for Health and Safety. But before I talk about my area, I'd first like to give thanks to Matt Zurich for his service to the great state of Texas. He retired at the end of October after 15 years of state service. He left some pretty big shoes to fill given all he accomplished during his time here at DWC. Among some of his accomplishments, and of course in no specific order, were the 2008 fee guidelines, the pharmacy formulary, the medical quality review process, the accident prevention services rules, Comp Connection, and the elimination of the medical fee dispute backlog. In addition to these accomplishments, succession planning was a priority for him. He often said that organizations take on the characteristics of their leaders, and he was right. He is right. He was always right. He set this example for through his daily actions. In essence, he actually walked the talk. So he ensured that at his departure, a strong team of leaders were left behind to steer the ship. Leaders who are knowledgeable, experienced, and committed to do the right thing and what is best for our system. So while there is still work left to be done, I do have a whole crew ready to steer the ship in the right direction. But as many of you know, before taking on this new role, I held the position of Director of Healthcare Business Management and designated Doctor Operations. Health and safety today includes all that was already under my umbrella, with the addition of MFDR, medical fee dispute resolution, and workplace safety. As for the designated doctor program, with Joe retiring at the end of this year, I'm also assuming the responsibility of the entire designated doctor program. And so at this point, I too want to also thank Joe for his 25 years of service and his leadership. Joe's career has been focused on management, business process analysis, and state agency administration within TDI, DWC, and SORM. As Deputy Commissioner for Business Process, Joe has been responsible for the division's claim file and electronic records management functions. The designated doctor program, information management services, business process improvement, and DWC's enterprise automation planning. Most recently, though, Joe has led the charge of two significant designated doctor role projects that are going on today and that Commissioner Nelson mentioned. And of course, you will hear from Joe a little bit later about the projects in a bit. So as Commissioner Nelson mentioned, we are losing two great leaders. We lost one. We're going to be losing another one. But we're going to be okay. So here's a look at what health and safety looks like today. So DWC monitors the delivery of medical benefits and the quality of healthcare provided in our system to ensure that injured employees have access to prompt, high-quality, cost-effective medical care appropriate to the work-related injuries. So how do we do this? We do this through the Office of the Medical Advisor. And our medical advisor, Dr. Owen, is the head of this program. So as you know, the Office of the Medical Advisor monitors the quality of healthcare in the in our system by conducting evidence-based medical quality reviews of healthcare providers and other system participants. OMA also coordinates communications about healthcare provider reviews with state licensing boards. Dr. Owen also recommends to Commissioner Nelson rules and policies regarding medical care and medical delivery systems and determines which doctors meet the qualifications to serve as designated doctors. And of course, all of this is possible through the help of our Medical Quality Review Panel, or MQRP as we like to refer to them. Our panel is comprised of 60 healthcare practitioners that assist Dr. Owen in this medical quality review process. Also another program area under my umbrella is healthcare development. Healthcare development is led by Chris Vogley, who was recently promoted to a director position. So this program area researches and analyzes economic factors and treatment protocols that form the basis for advising Commissioner Nelson regarding development of healthcare related rules and guidelines for medical fees, medical treatment, return to work, and impairment ratings. This program is critical in ensuring that we stay current with healthcare issues going on nationwide and how these issues may affect or impact our system. And then there's healthcare business management. So this is the area that I managed before. And so healthcare business management is a position, the director position is currently vacant. And so I am looking for someone to fill those shoes. This person will lead the staff and provide support to the medical advisor in meeting his statutory responsibilities, such as investigating standard of care complaints, as well as quality decisions issued by designated doctors, IROs, and peer reviewers, as well as carrying out the plan-based audits and overseeing the designated doctor certification process. But besides that area, healthcare business management also includes healthcare provider outreach, which provides internal and external training on medical benefits, as well as educational outreach efforts to encourage non-participating healthcare providers to become involved in our system. Healthcare provider support also provides services to external customers through Comp Connection. We have both a 800 line and an email that we can receive those inquiries and provide assistance. And typically this assistance is regarding inquiries related to our rules, policies, procedures, including questions about billing and dispute resolution. The next program is Return to Work Outreach. So this program provides outreach and education to employers, carriers, healthcare providers, injured employees on the value and benefits of injured employees returning to productive roles in the workplace after an injury. We, of course, partner with the Texas Workforce Commission to present information at various conferences with employers. Then we have medical fee dispute resolution, which actually MFDR is the program area that I was hired to almost 15 years ago to lead. And so, but this this program area currently is led by Director Greg Arndt. And what MFDR is responsible for is for processing and resolving reimbursement disputes related to compensable and medically necessary non-network healthcare services that have already been provided. And the one thing that I will say about MFDR is that not only do they take calls and they look at documentation that are part of the dispute, these members that make up MFDR, they issue well-written detailed decisions that explain to parties the outcome of a dispute. The decision serves as a roadmap for parties and helps in the dispute process, specifically when the decisions are appealed to the next level. Then we have the designated doctor program, which it's a large program and it's a key program in our system. As you all know, designated doctors perform an important role in resolving many types of questions or disputes about injured employees' claim. And to ensure that we have qualified designated doctors, the designated doctor program is comprised of two sub-programs, if you will. You have designated doctor education and designated doctor operations. Designated doctor education is led by Dr. Lori Wasserberger as our designated doctor education advisor, which provides education, training, resources, and direction to designated doctors and other system participants to make sure that doctors are qualified to evaluate injured employees. This section also oversees testing, including test development and administration. And then the designated doctor operations is led by Director Santiago Calderon. In this program area, they're responsible for processing all the DWC-32s or the requests for designated doctor examinations. This program area also collaborates with other program areas to ensure injured employees understand the designated doctor process. And Santiago's team also provides the logistical support to Dr. Wasserberger during the designated doctor certification courses and optional webinars. So all of that is what makes the health part of this role. The safety part is workplace safety, which is led by Director Chris DeMura. And this program, generally speaking, provides Texas employers and employees with health and safety resources and services to prevent occupational injuries and illnesses. And so I know I've said a lot, but that's the program, that's all that encompasses health and safety. It is a large program area, but as you can see, we have some very well experienced and tenured employees that will help me lead this charge. And so I'm going to go ahead and turn it over to the next person, Kate, to Kim Donovan.
Hi. Thank you, Mary. Good morning and hello. For those of y'all that I don't know, it's nice to virtually meet you. I am the new Deputy Commissioner for Operation and External Relations. And this new program area consists of DWC Communications, which the director is Melissa Gale. Also includes the External Media Relations, which Kate Sidora, who is our host, is also the director of that group. And then our research and evaluation group, the director is Bo Tao Shi. So prior to joining DWC at the beginning of this month, I was most recently with the Office of Public Insurance Counsel for about 4.5 years as their chief policy analyst. And prior to that, I was with TDI as a manager in the property and casualty lines office. So, and then prior to my public service, I did work in the private sector for a little over 20 years with two large carriers and a bunch of different roles from claims adjusting to national claims compliance manager. So I'm happy to be here. That's a little bit about my background, but I'm excited to be here and work with everyone. Thank you.
The next program area is business process, and I am Tammy Campion, and Commissioner Nelson has given me the opportunity to be the next Deputy Commissioner of Business Process. As was mentioned, I will be replacing Joe McElrath, who will be retiring in December, and until then, Joe and I will continue to work through this transition. I want to take this time to assure you that the quality service and responsiveness you've come to expect from Business Process will continue. I have worked for the division for many years, most recently as the Director of Business Process Operations, directing the daily operations and services provided by Information Management Services, Enterprise Automation Services, and Business Process Services. Information Management Services is directed by Russ Harper. They are responsible for creating and maintaining a comprehensive database of workers' compensation data reported to the division. This allows us to report on performance of the workers' comp system, provide data for public information requests, and report performance and workload measures. Enterprise Automation Services is directed by Martha Loeveno. Martha is responsible for the claim and medical billing data reported to the division through electronic data interchange or EDI. Her area provides project management for DWC's technology and modernization projects, and they provide responsive information for claim record request and employer coverage verification request. Business Process Services is directed by Hugo Salazar. Hugo is responsible for the management of DWC's electronic records. His area provides support to customers filing electronic documents through Secure File Transfer Protocol, or SFTP, documents uploaded through the new TextComp portal, or documents received through facsimile. Hugo's area also provides support and management of system participants' SFTP boxes. Thank you for this time, and I would like to thank Commissioner Nelson for this opportunity, and to thank Joe McElrath for preparing me for this opportunity. And now I will turn it back over to Mary Landrum for an update from the Office of the Medical Advisor.
Thank you, Tammy. Okay, next slide, please. So the next few slides that you're going to see are the typical slides information that we share with you on a quarterly basis. This provides you with the number of complaints that came in that were investigated by the Office of the Medical Advisor. So in calendar year 2022, we received 80 complaints. And these types of complaints that are investigated by the office, by OMA, are complaints related to the standard of care or quality of decisions issued by IROs, peer-reviewed doctors, URAs, and even designated doctors. We concluded 115 complaints. The investigations were concluded, and of those, 35% were closed with no action. 16%, there was a letter of education that was issued. 26%, we initiated a medical quality review, and that is when we have experts or members of the medical quality review panel do the review to determine if there was noncompliance. And then finally, 23% were referred to enforcement. Next slide, please. This slide shows the number of quality reviews that were initiated, meaning we assigned two members of the medical quality review panel per review, again, to determine if there was any noncompliance. Most of these 24 reviews were part of the URA plan-based audit that we initiated earlier this year. As far as reviews that were concluded in this time period, 10 reviews were concluded, 30% were referred to enforcement, 70% were recommended for other actions. And then the last slide that I have, it's in reference to cases that were referred to enforcement. This year so far, 9 referrals were made to enforcement. Enforcement has closed 15 cases of OMA cases. In the 15 closures include 4 consent orders, 7 warning letters, and 4 with other actions, which some of these numbers you're going to see by a presentation by Deborah here in just a bit. 29 OMA cases remain pending in enforcement, and we have 1 case that is pending at SOA. And before I turn it over, just know that recently we did post the proposed calendar 23 annual audit plan. And we plan on doing 1 plan-based audit, which is the looking at the use of gabapentin with opioids, and also assisting in the healthcare provider performance-based oversight with the return to work piece, wherein injured employees are kept off of work. And the comment period did end, and so we're in the process of reviewing all the input that was submitted. So that's all that I have at this point, and I will turn it over to the next speaker, I believe is Deborah.
Yep, that's me.
Thank you.
Thanks, Mary.
Mm-hmm, sure.
So I'm Deborah Knight, and I'm the Deputy Commissioner for Compliance and Investigations. Let's go ahead, next slide. So let's go ahead and start. I have 3 main areas, and so we'll start with our complaints portion. For calendar, so this is just an overview of calendar year 2022. So we're going to calendar year here. We've received at almost the entire year, we're almost through 1,839 complaints. Now, when we talk about complaints, really what we're talking about are allegations of administrative violations. That's what we're looking for. And so that's the complaints that we have authority to do something with. Of those, this kind of a breakdown of the categories of the type of complaints. The vast majority are obviously the communications area. But we also have the quality of care, medical benefit delivery. So we break those into the different care categories. Of that 1,839, about almost 70% of those are from external folks who have submitted complaints, and about 31% of those are internal referrals from other areas within the department. The top areas that y'all might be interested in as far as the complaints, like the confirmed complaints, are pursuing a private claim against workers' compensation injured employees, the failure to timely file required reports following a designated doctor exam, and the failure of the healthcare provider to timely respond to a request for a refund from an insurance carrier, are the top healthcare type complaints that we see in the system. We've closed 1,307. Of those, 291 were confirmed complaints. What that means is that the complaint was investigated and there was confirmed administrative violation based on the investigation. Those are all referred to, if it's a confirmed complaint, it is referred to enforcement for further action. 431 were determined to be an education complaint. We're statutorily required to prioritize what type of administrative violations that we investigate completely. There are, if you look at the labor code and the associated rules, there are probably they're close to about 600 types of various violations. Not all of those are investigated if we get a complaint about those, but we do look at those and send education letters if those types of things that are lower risk are identified, and we send out education letters. And the 584 were not confirmed. So those were investigated and there was no confirmed violation based on the investigation. Next slide. So calendar year complaints by respondent type, just to kind of break down all those complaints of what we're looking at. Okay, we need to work on that slide, that injured employee, the last letter. I'll work on the slide in the future. So most of those, if we look at healthcare provider, the category of complaint that you hear that we see the most of course, is communications, then and medical benefits. Next slide. So we'll move into the healthcare provider performance-based oversight, or PBO. So once again, we're statutorily required to do an assessment of healthcare providers and insurance carriers every other year. So the next year is the healthcare provider PBO. Next slide. It was the methodology was published in July 26. Here's the link to it. If you have any questions, it's the same. We're looking at the same things, assessing the same things that we've done for the last at least 5 years. We're going to look at the 73s and the 69s for the periods that are in the slide, and the weights haven't changed from the last time we did this review. Next slide. So what, as a healthcare provider, if what you do to get ready for the PBO, go ahead and check your top your text comp provider profile. And if you have and update it, if you have some issue, if you have some concerns or questions about it, go ahead and go to the site to, if you have questions, and read the methodology paper. I think it will answer a lot of your questions. Next slide. The 2023 healthcare provider PBO schedule. So in April of 2023, healthcare providers selected for the 73 review will be asked to provide copies of their 73s, because we don't retain those copies. We don't have copies of those, but we'll reach out and get and request the copies. In the summer of 2023, the preliminary findings will be provided for the both reviews, both assessments, the 73s and the 69 category reviews. December 2023, so just this time next year, we'll publish the results and we'll start planning for the 2024 and 25 PBO begins in next couple months. And so if you have recommendations for either one of those, for either the healthcare or the insurance carrier assessment PBOs, please send your recommendations or questions or concerns or suggestions to this site. Next slide. Okay, so now we're gonna go to another area, which is the fraud and prosecutions area. Next slide. So we're gonna go fiscal year. So since September, we've had 358 referrals to the fraud unit. Of those, we opened up 55 of those cases. Now remember, what we're talking about for fraud is this is criminal fraud investigation. So we look at the allegations as submitted in the complaint to see if true, is that a does that constitute fraud that we have authority to investigate potentially prosecute? Of those, we've closed 13 and we've sent 2 fraud referrals for prosecution since the beginning of this fiscal year. Next slide. Also, since the beginning of the fiscal year, we've had 3 convictions, 1 healthcare provider conviction, and that was a providing services, billing for services that were not provided. It was a, the scheme was a pharmacy scheme. We had 1 injured employee conviction, which was a while working and drawing, so working while drawing workers' compensation benefits, and 1 employer scheme, which was a hiding payroll. And so those are our 3 convictions since the beginning of the fiscal year. Next slide. So let's go to the enforcement update. Now, the enforcement are the folks that do the administrative, they prosecute the administrative violations SOA or State Office of Administrative Hearings, or the vast majority of these are resolved through a consent order. But let's look at their stats. Next slide. So calendar year, we've had, we've closed 554. So let's go a little bit, let me give you a little bit of history with our enforcement area. Our enforcement area had a very large turnover in the last year. We had almost every attorney is new in our area, as well as our, and we've actually undergone at least 2 new people in our, in the support area for the enforcement area. We had a really big backlog because of our turnover. And so we've worked really hard. The enforcement areas worked very hard. And their new director, Nikki Carr, has worked extremely hard to get to move this area and to get it full. We are almost full. We've got 1 position that's still open for an attorney position, but we're hoping to be full, knock on wood, within the next month. So of those cases, though, so we've got now 344 pending cases as of the date of this slide, which was beginning of this month. Next slide. Let's break them down just a little bit more. The pending cases by subject matter, by subject or our system participant is we have 63 cases against healthcare providers, 271 insurance carriers, and other is 10. Others could be attorneys or employers or injured employees in the system. That's the makeup of the pending cases currently in enforcement. Next slide. Closed cases. We closed 403 cases that were against insurance carriers, 131 against healthcare providers, and then the 11 others. So next slide. So by disposition type, normally, like I said, they are consent orders or warning letters or other. Other could be an education letter or closing with that action includes those. So the vast majority of our cases are, so we have orders for DWC orders, 240 against carriers. Of those cases were resolved by an order, and most of those are agreed orders. And 153 by warning letters. So let's look at the healthcare providers, which I guess this group's probably more interested in. 31 of those were resolved by order. Once again, the most of those are agreed consent orders, and 89 by warning letter. Next slide. So all our enforcement orders are put on the web. And so this is the site if you want to go look at what those orders look like. Next slide. Are there any questions? So if there aren't any questions, then I'll go ahead and turn it over to the next speaker, which is a legislative update. And so Kim Donovan will present
that. Thank you. Okay, next slide, please. Okay, so I wanted to provide a legislative update this morning. I think, as many of you know, the Texas legislature meets every other year. Pre-filing did start on November 14th. There's already been approximately 1,100 bills filed, so there's been a lot of activity already. The session will kick off at noon on January 10th. Another key date for this session is March 10th, which is the date that new bills can no longer be filed, with exceptions for emergency or local bills. And then, of course, May 29th is sine die, which will be the end of the regular session. Next slide, please. Another date of note for us at DWC is we have a statutorily required report that is due by December 1st. We do plan on publishing it this week on December 1st. We're required to tell the legislature about the health of the workers' comp system. We're also able to make recommendations, legislative recommendations that we believe will be beneficial to the system. So as Commissioner Nelson mentioned, next slide, please. He gave the background on our priority recommendation for this year, which is to exempt any medical examination or service performed to determine the appropriate level of benefits under the Texas Workers' Compensation Act from sales and use tax. So that is our priority for this session. Our other recommendation, next slide, Kate, is to amend the Texas Labor Code under Chapter 412. So here we are seeking a limited public information exception for the working papers and electronic communications for the ALJs and appeals panel judges. This is something that there's already an exemption for the SOA ALJs. So we're simply asking for the same exception. So those are the two key recommendations that we have for this year. We also, if next slide, please, just wanted to talk about some things that we are expecting for this session. One thing is first responders, and some of the things may be expanding eligibility certain benefits, expanding the presumption laws, or broadening the definition of a first responder. We also, there may be an extension of the COVID-19 presumption, which that was passed last session, and it'll expire on September 1st, 2023, if it's not extended. There also potentially may be a bill filed to study and or make changes to the medical treatment guidelines. Some things that we have already seen filed is a bill to have 24-hour coverage policies for work and non-work related injuries. And then also for the state workers' compensation to give benefits to active duty National Guard members serving on the border. So those are some of the things to look out for this session. I look forward to talking to everybody next quarter, and we'll have another update with what things we've actually seen filed. And that's all that I have. If there's no questions for me, I'll turn it over to Joe McElrath to talk about the designated doctor rules.
Good morning. I just wanted to give a brief update about the designated doctor rules that Mary and Commissioner Nelson mentioned a little before. The first set of rules are Chapter 127 and Chapter 180.23, which are the designated doctor procedures that include training and testing and the elements that are needed to request a designated doctor exam. So all of those changes. We went through two informal rounds and came up with what we think is a very good formal proposal. Also with the proposal, we'll also be posting several forms. One of them, of course, is the DWC 32, the request for designated doctor exam. We'll be putting that out to get feedback from you about that form, which we normally do at the formal proposal level. We'll also be making some minor changes to the 67, which is the designated doctor certification application. So we're very hopeful that will be able to be published in the next few weeks for you to have time to review and comment formally on those. That'll be out for a 30-day comment period to receive your feedback. And then we're hoping that we can move to adoption very quickly after that. Of course, those rules, the 127 and 180 rules, are everything having to do with the designated doctor program except billing and reimbursement. And as Commissioner Nelson mentioned earlier, the billing and reimbursement rules, which are Chapter 133 and 134, are currently out for your comment and feedback. Our comment period is set to end on December 16th, and we really hope that you'll take a look at those documents and give us your feedback. In addition to updated rule language, we posted a table of all of the fees that are proposed for a change, and the fee changes to fees include designated doctor, exam fees, required medical exams, and maximum medical improvement and impairment rating exams by treating doctors and referral doctors. So hopefully that table will be an easy way to understand the changes in fees, which are also reflected in the text. Also, we have put up some billing examples that we used in our first informal proposal that showed you some of the billing methodology changes. We have updated those examples to include the new fee amount so that you can get a better picture in terms of what a billing example for a particular type of exam is today and what it would be like under those revised rules. So please go to our website and take a look at those, and we look forward to your comments as well. And just one last thing, I'd like to thank everyone for their kind words this morning for me. And I just wanted to also say that it's been an honor and a pleasure to work with so many of you over the years, and I wish you all the best luck in the future. Thank you. Any questions? No?
All right. Well, sorry about those technical difficulties there. Part of the fun of being in a new building that they're still doing construction on. I think we all kind of lost internet there for a few minutes. But a reminder, the videos of this will be posted online. So if you think you did miss anything, you'll be able to go on there to find it. And before we close, last opportunity for any questions about any topics we went over or anything else. Okay, and I did just want to mention one other thing on our recommendation for the designated doctor sales tax issue. The opinion from the comptroller's office is specific to designated doctor exams, but it could be interpreted to apply to other types of exams like RME exams or MMI IR exams. So our recommendation is probably going to be to exempt all of those types of exams from sales taxes. So I just want you to be aware of that. If you're not a DD, but you do those types of exams, or that's your business model for your company, just be aware of that. It'll be something that you all will want to keep an eye on, and maybe see if you want to get behind it. But with that, thank y'all for being here, and have a good Christmas. We don't talk to you.
Thanks, everybody.